Welcome, Natasha. Thank you very much for accepting our invitation and being part of our initiative. We're doing this podcast in order to reach as many students as possible, and we want to educate them as well. So you are a PhD candidate at TU Eindhoven in the field of innovation sciences. And as far as I know, before this, you studied environmental sciences at Utrecht University. And here I was wondering, where did it all start and why this affinity towards environmental sciences?
Yeah, so I think it started mainly with my parents, who raised me quite environmentally conscious. Also, I've always had an interest in nature. I've always had an interest in animals. And for example, I've been a vegetarian since I was 15. And I've always find these kinds of topic very, very important to think about the world that we live in and to, well, not only live in it and use it up, but also to coexist with nature and to, well, live together as well as we can. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then then I chose to study environmental social sciences because in my high school education, I didn't have all the exact courses, or how is it, the beta courses. So I didn't have chemistry or physics. But I really wanted to study the topic of, of environmental sciences. So that's why I chose for this study. I think it was the only study in the Netherlands where I could study environmental sciences without having to have this more beta background.
Yeah, without having to study the these very scientific mathematic courses, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So I didn't do any climate modeling or any computations or things like that. Yeah.
But do you think if you would have, then maybe your next projects would be different? As in, do you think that would have maybe broadened your horizon a bit, or you just didn't like them in the very beginning?
It would have been interesting as well. One of my friends who did study more the beta side of environmental sciences, she is now looking into I have to look this up. but the lowering of the ground in the Netherlands and the water that is going out.
Oh, okay.
So
I know what you mean.
Yeah, so she looks at a completely different side of environmental sciences, which I also find very important and very interesting. So I think there are so many sides and angles to choose from. And I mean, I like the topic that I work on, but it could as well be another topic. Yeah.
Okay. And what is actually the topic you are working on right now as your PhD project?
Yeah, so I am currently in a PhD project on the creation of energy communities mainly. What I'm most interested in is to see how the creation of these energy communities, how this will impact the transition towards a more sustainable energy system, and also if this has any impacts on justice issues across the energy system. And then I'm interested looking not only at the impact for the members of the energy communities, but I'm also very interested in the impact that community energy development as a whole can have on the energy system. Maybe I should also explain what I mean when I say energy communities.
That was exactly my next question.
Yes. So with energy communities, I refer to mainly any group of people, but it can also be a group of companies or maybe even a municipality that decides to either together buy energy from the market, or that together generates energy and uses it together and also shares this energy together. And this can be electricity, for example, it can be a neighborhood in which there are many solar panels on the roof, in which there is also a neighborhood battery so that the solar electricity can be stored and redistributed among the neighborhoods. But it can also be warmth, for example, that is used together in an energy community.
And you said that you are looking at the justice aspect quite a lot, right?
Yes.
So that means that right now the situation is unjust for these energy communities.
Well, maybe to put it in perspective, energy communities are often presented as a way of creating energy justice in the energy system. So indeed, for some communities, for example, there are communities that live close to nuclear power plants and that are really opposed to these nuclear power plants, and then decide, okay, we want to do it ourselves. So you want to have autonomy, and we want to be able, to influence the type of energy that we use ourselves. So for example, in Germany, I think the community energy movement really started also as a anti-nuclear movement. It can also be quite rich communities that are able to buy solar panels and that don't want to give the energy or the electricity back to the electricity grid, but that say, hey, my neighbor also needs electricity. Why can't I just share this electricity with them? So it doesn't need to be, an energy community doesn't need to be created out of energy injustices, but they are said to lead to energy justice. I hope this gives a answer to your question.
Yeah, it does indeed. And this project is happening in the Netherlands, or do you have a broader cover?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because there is energy community development in the Netherlands, but my project specifically focuses not on the Netherlands, but on Belgium, on Italy, Spain, Israel, and India. So that's always a bit annoying when I talk with people that about that I study energy communities. They always ask about the Dutch context, and then I don't have that much information about it. So then I feel less of an expert. Yeah.
Yeah, but are there any barriers that you have to overcome when doing such a, when being part of such a big and large project? Because you mentioned a few places in the world which are not really close to each other.
True.
And you are in the Netherlands, so I think there I don't know, are there any boundaries or any limitations that you have?
Yeah, definitely. Currently, I'm in the end of my current quarantine. So, it has not been possible in the past year to even travel. And then another annoying thing is that I try to fly as less as possible. So I really choose to take the train to the demonstration sites that I want to research, which becomes a bit of a problem when I want to go to India, but in Europe that's fine. So that's one issue, that I need to go there, and that currently it's quite difficult to travel, or yeah, it's not even allowed. But I do plan on traveling as soon as I am allowed again to the demonstration sites in Europe and also to India. But another challenge is, of course, you have so many different contexts. How can you even compare these contexts with each other? And how can you do a proper study when when the context in which these energy communities are situated is so different. So that's another challenge.
Yeah, exactly. Because thinking of how you would approach this in India compared to Belgium, I think they're completely different. How do you cope with this? Is there a framework that you are applying, or you just do field research and then, yeah?
Yeah, I think the idea of energy justice is suitable for this comparison. I haven't been to India yet, so it's a bit difficult to tell you already how I will cope with these differences. But I do think that the principles of energy justice, even though that energy justice is also critiqued of being quite a Western narrative, and that you should be careful with imposing this narrative to other contexts. But I do think that the principles of energy justice to start with will guide me in making at least this comparison. Yeah.
Yeah, you made a very interesting point there about how scientists from Western countries go in the global south or to the east and try to enforce the knowledge they have without really taking into consideration the local communities, which I believe now it's quite an issue.
there's also... I think maybe this should be off record, but I think you even had the talk by Ankit, right?
Yes.
Kumar, about exactly this or not. Also energy communities and how the notion of community is so different in the West than in India.
Yeah, he didn't give many details about this, pretty broad because...
He recently also wrote in a paper about the different connotations to community that in Europe, when we are discussing energy communities, we also see energy communities as an opportunity to create a community feeling in a neighborhood and to create actually a community, while in India, and now I only speak of the knowledge that I have from his paper, but in India, there the community is a completely different thing, and it's maybe even more intuitive to work in a community and to organize energy together than it is in Europe. So these are completely different contexts.
Mm-hmm. So it might even be a bit easier to do it in India than here.
Yeah. Don't know.
So at some point you mentioned also energy justice. Can you just give us a brief definition of what energy justice is?
Yeah, I can. So energy justice is really about... a fair way to organize the energy system. And with this, I mean that all types of people, regardless of their race, color, their gender, their social status, should be able to meaningfully participate in energy decision making. The costs and benefits of the energy system should be distributed fairly among all people and all levels in society. And for me, energy justice is really about all types of injustices that can occur along the value chain. So when we are talking about fossil fuels, you have to also take into consideration the extraction of fossil fuels and the transportation to the place where it's used, and the impacts of using these fossil fuels. And then I refer to greenhouse gas emissions. But when you relate this to renewable energy technologies, you also have to take into account the technologies themselves, how they are made, how they are disposed after they are used. So For me, energy justice is really quite a broad notion to really account for all the different types of energy injustices that can occur across the value chain.
So if we so energy transition is not the key to really solve all of our problems now, because we do tend to forget the social aspect of what kind of impact the energy transition has on people in the end, right?
I do think that many narratives on the energy transition also include the social part of this energy transition, only if it accounts for social acceptance, because even if you don't really care about the social impacts, you need people to cooperate with you and to buy solar panels or to use less energy. So I think I don't think the social part is generally forgotten when we talk about energy transitions, but I do think that it could be more inclusive and maybe not stay confined to the energy system within a country, but it should also include the whole value chain of how energy is produced or of how the technologies that are produced to create renewable energy. So I don't think the social part is forgotten, but I think it can be more broad and more inclusive, more system-wide maybe.
Okay. And how open are actually engineers and policymakers to be more inclusive with this aspect?
From your experience.
Yeah, that's a difficult question, because on the one hand, what I do see is that generally speaking, when people are engaging with renewable energy technologies, they feel and they really have the strong feeling of I am contributing to a better world, and I am really doing my best to lower the greenhouse gas emissions. Then it becomes a bit difficult to start maybe nagging about the energy injustices that are also related to renewable energy technologies. And we should not be too negative here, because you cannot compare these negative energy justice impacts related to renewable energy technologies to the negative energy justice impacts related to fossil fuels. That's not even a comparison, because, well, then you're just so much worse off when you're talking about fossil fuels. But that doesn't mean that you should not address the other issues that are also occurring when you start to use a different type of energy. So I think it's a bit difficult, because how should I put it? I think it's a bit difficult because people really believe, and I really think that people really believe and really want to contribute to a more sustainable society and a more clean energy system. So I would not say that. Could you maybe ask your question again, what it was precisely?
No, you kind of answered it. The question was just how open are actually engineers and policy makers to become more focused on this justice aspect rather than profit, efficiency, and as you said, just lowering the emissions.
And maybe to add to that, there is really increasing attention also to, for example, the mining of critical materials and critical minerals that are needed for the energy transition. And there is also increasing attention to how do we even distribute these minerals and materials if we don't have that much of them, And if we mine, for instance, cobalt, if we mine it in the Democratic Republic of Congo, should we then even use it here? Because we in the Netherlands, we don't have these mines next to our house, and we don't have the negative environmental burden of these mines, and also not the human rights violations that are related to the mining of this material, cobalt. So these are all questions that are addressed and addressed, but that are being thought about and that are being mentioned as well. So it's not like nothing is happening there, and I just want to point at everyone that people should pay attention. But I do think that it's a difficult conversation, because a lot of policymakers and a lot of people working with renewable energy technologies genuinely want to contribute to a better and cleaner world. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's very nice to hear. And yeah, very insightful discussion that I think can go on for quite a while. And I do have a last question for you. And that is a pretty broad question, but is there any advice you would give to a young scientist that would be interested in working in the field of energy transition?
Yeah, I consider myself a young scientist. So
even younger.
Yeah.
Someone in their bachelor year.
Yeah, so I started with studying environmental studies, actually. So that was really the social, economic, and policy side of environmental studies. And I ended up in a project working on the energy transition. So to be honest, I didn't think that would be where I would be now when I started with my bachelor's. So I think if you really find the energy transition interesting, then just, yeah, find ways to feed yourself with information about the energy transition, and also, find interesting projects, or maybe become a volunteer at a local organization working on the energy transition. And I would just say feed your curiosity and see where it end, where you end up.
Would you say it's a difficult subject to work on, since it's still pretty new?
I think really a lot is happening in the energy sector. Really a lot is happening. So it's a difficult topic to work on, because there are so many facets of the energy transition that you should take into account when analyzing it or when working in it. And also, a lot of the technologies can also be quite difficult to understand, maybe. But I don't think that it's a particular difficult topic to work on, just because so much is happening and because so many people are working on it already. And energy is, of course, not new. I mean, we've been using energy always. So yeah.
It's very interesting to see how in the very beginning you said you really didn't like all of these beta topics, and now you're working on a project about energy. And if you talk about energy, then maybe you would think of physics.
So even as a person that doesn't like physics, energy still is a really interesting topic to work on. Yeah, definitely.
that's a very nice point. Okay, thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much for your nice insights. I'll take this with me. I learned many new things.
Great, good to hear.
And let's hope our listeners will enjoy it as much as I did.